Okay.
All right.
Why don't we...
Sounds good to me.
Do we have any witty banter for the lead-in?
I think
recorded?
Us no, running
I think
around
pretty much killed it.
Pretty much.
Cash does that.
Oh, well, you get a shot of Lloyd. We didn't... Show him the cameraman.
But somebody
say
has...
Say hi, Lloyd.
Mm-hmm. Hi, Lloyd.
Hey, Lloyd. There's the cameraman.
Yeah.
Who is, by the way, a major motion picture star in his own right.
Oh, yeah.
What movie were you in? What was the like a Civil War era kind of?
There's
or
like
a fort or something like that?
There's like 50 movies
Super
he's
8,
in.
Which is like a monster movie from outer
space. Oh, he was in
a
Super
8. Super 8.
Oh, no. His big breakthrough role was in Saving Mr. Banks.
Saving Mr. Banks, yes.
Cool.
I was on the other side of the horse.
Yeah, he was the person on the other side of the horse.
And what did you do?
I led the horse around.
Cute.
Yes, but you got to be in the same era as Tom Hanks.
He wasn't there.
Ooh.
That was in the early part before
okay.
He played Walt Disney.
Yeah, and that took place in the middle of the Australian outback, and they
also
recorded it at Simi Valley.
Oh, my gosh.
Okay.
Since we're all here, let's start a podcast.
Okay, count it on down.
Yeah, why not? Okay. Sure.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Hi, I'm Patricia Kaufman, and I'm here today with Confederate Postal History, and you're listening to Stamp Show Here Today.
It's hard to send up. It's hard to send up.
Welcome to Stamp Show Here Today, episode number 46. I'm sitting here with Scott, Kaz, Jeff, Steve Patillo, and I'm your host Jessica. And we'll be joined later by Richard Lehman, a special guest. You can find us on Facebook at Stamp Show Here Today and on Twitter at Stamp Show HT. Tell your friends they can find us in iTunes, Podbay, and Stitcher. Let's talk about stamps.
In just a second, we have a special thing that we just installed. If you don't like the podcast, if you hate us, there's a little button that says subscribe. Hit the subscribe button, and we will get your negative vote, basically. The more people who click the subscribe button, the more we know we suck.
You know the one that I heard recently is if you don't like something, just double tap the like button.
Ah, okay, that you can do too.
That also works.
Yeah. Tap it once for like and tap it twice if you don't like it.
Yeah.
So this week we'll be talking about stamp news. Our friend Steve Crippy finds an unlisted variety. And a Stamp Show Here Today exclusive for our stamp stories is a misplaced uninverted Jenny sheet. And the hashtag is...
Allegedly.
We must sprinkle that in.
Yeah.
Hashtag stamp stories, hashtag listen up Aussies. And our expert topic of the week will be our special guest, Richard Lehman. He will be joining us for that. So, stamp news. A new variety is found. We are happy to confirm that last week our friend Steve Crippy received a certificate of authenticity, proving that, yes, he does in fact have a new and one of two only known versions of a value omitted variety of Scott catalog number 1689, and we saw it first.
Yeah.
And for those of you who don't know, 1689 is part of the 1976 set of souvenir sheets. It's the high value, the 31-cent sheet, and the value was omitted on the first stamp on the left.
So there's four of those sheets, right?
There's four in the set, yes.
Okay.
Which one was this, by the way?
This is...
The U.S.
Was
Revolutionary...
Was it him crossing the Delaware or on his horse or...
It was
the snowstorm.
The snowstorm?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
U.S. Revolutionary War and George Washington.
You know, of all the sheets, that one's the least nutritious.
Of course.
But it's the highest in value.
Hmm. Is it?
Oh, too many bad jokes, too much quiet.
Oh, okay. Hey, we start off slow, and then we taper off.
There we go.
There you go.
So, he actually dug through 2,400 sheets to
find this
one.
Where did he get 2,400 sheets?
Hoard of sheets.
I've bought them by the thousand before.
Wow.
Wow.
Yeah.
Personally, I never liked that sheet.
Go through them, every one of them.
I hate that sheet because the perforations don't line up. It's hard to tear the stamps out.
You're not supposed to tear them.
Well, it's postage. Believe me, if he bought 1,400 sheets, they're getting used as postage.
I know. I've sold thousands of sets of those. Okay. And no, you don't tear them. You take a scissor, you snip to them to perf, and then fold them.
You know, it's funny, too, because that sheet,
to hear that burp.
The 31 center, was the one that I spoke about earlier where the post office didn't recognize it as a stamp and returned to postage due saying these aren't stamps.
Well, that's because she took it out of the sheet.
Yep. They probably couldn't even see
it. They wouldn't have recognized the sheet either.
Yeah.
No, probably not.
And now that it doesn't have a value.
Oh.
Yeah.
So I'm curious. Cash actually told us a few days ago why there's a possible answer, why some of these omitted varieties on these sheets occurred. Could you share that with our listeners?
Well, it's the lineup of it, right? It's from time to time, the paper will not hit at a certain level, and that's why some of them drop off the bottom, some of them drop off the top or the left or the right. That's what I've heard is the cause of the ones that are missing the numbers below the perforation line.
Allegedly.
Allegedly.
Kids, the word of the day is
allegedly.
So, Scott,
you could send an inquiry to the Bureau of Engraving and Printing if it's an older issue and ask them how it occurred. And you can
really?
Yes.
That's kind of cool.
Yes.
Well, then, Scott, speculation? Does that sound accurate? Well.
Sorry, I didn't get
it. It's either that or gnomes and sprites.
I like that answer. That works.
So there are two of these that were found with this particular omission. I called him today, and he said he has already sold one. So he still has one available if you want to get in on the ground floor of this new discovery. And it will be listed. Scott confirms it will be listed. Our Scott and the Scott catalog confirms
it will be listed
in 2017 as the 1689Y variety.
That's how many varieties there are. They all got all the way down to Y.
Well, the first five were for the individual stamps.
Oh, that's right, A through E.
So that means there are now 20 varieties and errors.
Oh my gosh. They've only got one more. Hurry, somebody find the Z.
Wonder if they do find two more. Then what happens?
AA?
AA?
AA? Do they actually double letter?
Yes.
AAA?
Wow.
Sometimes.
The Canadian variety found in Canada?
Well, we better buy some more sheets and go through them.
Oh, I know. Now we gotta go find new ones.
Yeah. Buy 3,000 sheets.
Just goes to show you that
time.
Some things are like lottery chances.
Really does.
Or like inverted Jennies.
Yay. That too. Yeah, we got one of those right there.
So if you guys want to see a picture of this, you can go to gradingmatters.com, click on cert verification, and enter certificate number 1305063 to get a sneak peek.
Yay! It's a really good picture, too.
Or, even better, you can go to gradedstamps.com and buy the one that's left.
Yeah. There you go.
Just buy it.
Mr. Fancy Pants.
Turned one upside down there.
Yeah, there's an invert. Yes. They
turned them up. I did that
they were
too,
stylishly done.
Oh, no.
I did. For everybody who's on Periscope, you can see it. For everybody who isn't, sorry.
I'm sorry. My
maybe next.
What do they do? They took a couple off and inverted them and put them back on?
Yeah.
Yes.
Oh, that's worse than what Jessica does to people.
No, this was used.
That's for your inquisitive.
Hey, give it back.
Oh, okay.
Jessica puts those on packages upside down on purpose to really freak people out.
All the time. So, hashtag stamp stories. Our stamp stories this week comes from an anonymous tip that came to us from Carson City, Nevada, about a possible, allegedly, postal catastrophe, allegedly, in Carson City. A woman purchased a sheet of catalog number 4806, the famous U.S. Inverted Jenny reissue, in order to mail a package to a friend in Australia, without paying any attention to the packaging the stamps came in, or the design. She slapped the sheet on the package and sent it on its way. It was not until several days later, I'm going to speculate, she was cleaning out her purse, as women do, and inspected the packaging of the stamp that the sheet came in. At the time, she found a card that had been placed inside the envelope, and it read, "Congratulations, you have found..."
So, dump her around the world.
She peeled the stamps off the sheet and put them on the package.
Yep.
The wrong way.
So there's six used ones out there.
Yes.
No, but they're normal. Once they're
Huh?
Off the sheet, they're normal, aren't
well,
they?
What are you talking
about? The physical plane,
they're going to be singles. A single. Are they going to give them an A number?
They're going to be used singles.
Excuse me, an A number.
It's in the catalog.
Yeah.
Or IE number.
It'll be
used.
What?
Just be a used stamp.
Yeah, it'll be used.
How do they say it down under?
Wouldn't it be terrible if it goes to the other side and the person goes, oh, I threw that away.
Oh, I know.
So this would mean that, allegedly, this woman used and sent a sheaf of stamps worth, I think, over $50,000, since there are no used copies in existence, through the United States mail to Australia, making the sheet the first possibly only known used copy in existence.
Well, the question is, did she use just the stamps, or did she put the whole sheet on there?
I don't know. Yeah. They don't say.
She would have just put the stamps on.
Yeah, if she's sending a package, she just slapped stamps on it.
I doubt she's a stamp collector. She didn't know about the sheet.
The frame was trash.
She was a stamp collector as well?
No, allegedly. I'm saying I doubt she was. Allegedly. She just stuck them on there.
Yeah.
It was shipped from allegedly Nevada to allegedly
Australia.
To Colonel L. Ector. Collector? Colonel L. Ector?
Today's
broadcast.
All right.
I'm so mad about it, though. That was my idea. Dang it. I wanted to. That was my actual goal. If I was ever to find one, I would split the sheet, and I was going to have three used copies. I would have taken them to the post office and had them hand cancel them on the spot. So I'd have the only known used copies in about 5 years.
Mm-hmm.
But now somebody else messed it up.
Yeah, but you don't know if they're ever going to be found.
That's true.
No.
That's a good point.
So while this report is as of yet not confirmed, we sincerely recommend that our 24 Australian listeners, yes, I looked it up, that they check all the packages that they receive in the mail from the United States in the last 2 months for this incredibly valuable rarity while we wait for the story to pan out.
They're given to a school child.
Oh, my gosh. There's going to be some kid.
No, the person threw
them
away because they couldn't soak them off the envelope.
Oh, yeah. No.
There you go.
Letter fluid.
Pure citrus right there. Give
that stuff.
That stuff right there. Get a little picture of it. Pure citrus available at Home Depot. That's the stuff that removes $2, well, any self-stick.
Does it cleanly.
It does it cleanly, and it smells like oranges.
It does.
Even on the Apple stamps?
Even on the Apple stamps.
Okay. This is also a source of interest to us here at Stampshire here today. As we speculate on this very topic, we ended our last discussion on the stamp of the opinion that the uninverted valuable variety was not packaged in a way that would be completely clear to any person opening them.
Well, not obviously just a collector, wasn't clear.
Yes.
And that they are incredibly valuable. So we want to know what you think, listeners. Tell us on Facebook at Stampshire today. Or on Twitter, at StampShowHT, hashtag StampStories, hashtag ListenUpAussies.
Yeah, my idea is every package should have of those stamps inside with the card and the stamp sheet should have been cellophane wrapped. And if you got one of the good ones, maybe have it a different color and then have it say, you know, read up on this or verify before opening.
Weren't they supposed to pay attention in school and learn reading?
Yeah, but it's America. Nobody pays attention anymore.
Oh, wait a minute. Then why not have an electronic buzzer go off when they open the package? Or something, you know?
I like that idea. So instead of our expert topic today, we're going to be joined by a special guest, Richard Lehman.
He is people who listen to the podcast and also read the ASDA magazine and other places know him as the person who gives stock market or stamp market tips, as well as speaking about investing in financial side of stamp collecting. And it's a real coup to have him here. I'm very happy.
Thank you, Jay. I appreciate being on your show.
Great. Well, Jessica, I know you have a couple questions to ask him.
Yes, I understand you've started a new website.
Well, actually, it's not new at all. We've had a website called Stamp Finder since 1996, and we were actually the first multi-dealer website on the internet. We got up to over a million listings in our site, but we were preparing everything for broadband to come along, and in the late 1990s, it turned out that broadband didn't happen when it was supposed to. In fact, all we had was bankruptcies, and as a result, we kind of had to shut things down for the time being.
Oh, that's an interesting side. So tell us a little bit about Stamp Finder.
Well, the new Stamp Finder that we're in the process of designing is really being designed along the same lines as what we call the Bloomberg system, which is a worldwide financial system, and it was designed to make information about companies and securities transparent and thereby build confidence to let people invest feeling that they were on equal footing with insiders and the large brokerage houses. Stamps lend themselves to very much to the same concept because there is a world of information out there on stamps. There's a tremendous history on the pricing of stamps and such, and we feel that making those available to collectors on a real-time basis and the availability of multi-dealer offerings side-by-side on one stamp or location is going to stimulate the market. To me, the biggest problem in Flatley today is that, you know, you've been given this tremendous tool called the Internet, which I think is the ideal vehicle for stamps because of the dislocation between supply and demand. But unfortunately, it's replaced it with tens of thousands of dealers all having their own unique website, which makes buying stamps like looking for a needle in a haystack.
Well, how do you think eBay has affected that also?
Well, eBay is one of those vehicles that is helping to solve that. It is very limited, though, in what it can offer to philately, because it really wasn't designed for philately. It was designed to sell any and all things, and therefore it works on basically a string search type platform. And what we've designed is a database platform that thereby allows us to take stamp offerings from anywhere in the world under whatever catalog system they use and offer it to side by side with offerings of a U.S. dealer and be able to offer it under four or five different major catalog systems or by topic or just by image if a person is just collecting pictures, if you will, or doesn't have a catalog.
Now, the standard disclaimer that we always use is that you should never, it is very verboten and very poor to discuss investing in the stamp collecting business. So after saying that, let's go ahead and discuss stamp investing. I really like a lot of the things that you've written. You've written quite a few articles. One of the things you brought up was the Bloomberg system and how information is now, I heard this from somebody just recently, information is now a business in itself. And I think it was you.
Yeah.
So sure. Tell us a little bit more about that and how the market has changed now because of this, the different platform that you've established with Stamp Finder.
Yeah, the thing here is that, you know, you look at how dealers make their money. And there's two ways, I think. One is that they, through over time, become extremely knowledgeable about the disparities between supply and demand on certain stamps. And so they know which of those stamps that they want to buy and how much they can really mark them up. The second one is the dislocation between supply and demand. And they know where to go to buy the stamps cheap and then be able to offer them at a higher price elsewhere. And these are factors that lead to huge disparities in pricing from one country to the next. And, of course, we know now with the fluctuation in currencies and such and the difference in time between publication dates of catalogs, that there are these other two components that tremendously disjoint the pricing of similar stamps from one country to the next.
Yeah, you wrote two articles. One of them was on the just differences in currencies between euros and how possibly you could buy stamps cheaper in Europe because of the devaluation of their currency versus the United States. The last one you wrote was most interesting. It was about Canadian stamps. Can you go a little bit into detail about exactly what your thought process was?
Well, Canada was a good example because the pricing between the U.S. and Canadian catalog was quite significant, but it's grown much more distorted by the fact that the Canadian dollar, which was on parity with the U.S. dollar before the energy blew out here, is down about 70 cents, and consequently, Canadian dealers are bleeding because of the fact that if they're selling to a U.S. collector, they'd love to sell them to them at U.S. dollar prices, but that would kill their Canadian business. So they're kind of the victims of this currency in that they can sell it now for the price they were looking at before, but they can't restock at those price levels. By the way, on the topic of stamp investing, I don't know if you saw the September issue of the American Stamp Dealers magazine, but I addressed the subject of stamp investing head on and basically gave my 2 cents worth on that subject, just as a subject, and I think it opens it up to a broader thinking than what is for the main part I think emotional thinking one way or the other on it, and I think that there you need to look at the logic of stamps as an investment, not just take a viewpoint that investors are encroaching on the hobby.
So technically, we have a stamp dealer with us, and I don't think he's in the business of breaking even, are you, Steve?
How'd you get that equation?
Last time I checked, you like to eat.
Yes, I do.
Do you like to pay rent?
I like to eat out every day.
Yeah, and we spoke about this before, and actually I met your son at the ASDA show in Grand Rapids and had a very good APS. Time with him. He was APS, I'm sorry. Very fun time there. But we were discussing how, you go on the blog sites and you mention investing in stamps, and everybody all of a sudden throws arrows at you. But funny thing, when they sell their stamps, they all want to make money off them.
I have a little story. A couple of years ago at a hamburger stand, the owner's daughter asked me, what did I do? And I said, oh, I'm a stamp dealer. And she goes, oh, you're a gambler.
Yeah.
Well, I knew a dealer for a long time, and he spent half of his year in Europe and Great Britain and the other half of the year over here. And he would float his stamps back and forth to take advantage of the differences in the currencies and the differences in the markets. And it didn't matter which way it was going. He had buyers and sellers on both sides of the Atlantic. And he did that for years. He made a career out of it.
Yeah, I can tell you a similar story. I lived in Brazil for a couple of years, and when I would visit stamp dealers, very often a dealer would come in from, he'd be coming in from Germany, for example. And he would say, okay, what do you have in German stamps? And the dealer would trot that out. And you say, wait a minute, where does he come off coming to Brazil for German stamps? Well, it turns out in the late 1880s, it was a great migration of Germans to southern Brazil. Hmm. And as a result, a lot of high-value stamps ended up in Brazil. And then people collected them down there because it was a link back to the homeland. But of course, the current generation was not interested in it. So there were all these very valuable stamps, but there was no resale market in Brazil. So these dealers would come in, buy the stuff up for a song, and take it back to Germany.
I happen to also know that while you're talking about Brazil, you actually happen to be an expert in Mexico. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, I approach it. I've gotten past the just strictly collector phase of my life, and I look at it from an investor point of view. And Mexico is a tremendously interesting for a number of reasons. One is a lot of the early stamps were produced in very small quantities because, quite frankly, there weren't many people that could eat, read, and write in Mexico back in the 1880s. And there were very few that ever left their had traveled more than 50 miles from their home, so they didn't know anybody to write to. And consequently, when the UPU, for example, when Mexico joined the UPU, they had to put out special stamps just for international mail because the postal rates were so much lower internationally than they were for domestic. And this created, and because of the fact that the Mexican districts each put their own unique numbering and lettering on the stamps, you have every stamp has 54 varieties to it. And some of these people, they'd create a whole sheet of stamps of 50 or 100 stamps, and it turned out after a year or two that only two of them were ever used. and so the rest of them would come back, and you ended up having tremendous rarities now for a country that has 60 million people and, is economically much better off and has hugely more collectors than there were in the past. I mean, there are literally stamps in Mexico where you can prove there was only one copy ever printed because it was an error in a sheet where only one sheet was printed.
Wow, that's the definition of rarity.
Yeah, exactly. And defined rarity. You know, it wasn't one where you have to learn over the years.
Seldom seen.
Up.
Yeah, seldom seen.
Yeah, that's right.
So what are your plans to relaunch Stamp Finder?
Well, we're looking at the New York Stamp Show in May of next year as a launch time for the new Stamp Finder site. And the way we intend to do that, I think, is that somewhat creative in that we're going to create a stamp app for the, a phone app for the show. And the idea is to get the app out to the collectors long before the show and invite them from a list of items to tell us what it is they're going to be coming to the show to see. What are they going to be coming to buy? Both in terms of topics or countries, but also specific items that they're going to buy. And then feed that information back to the 170 or 180 dealers that are going to be coming to the show and saying, look, people are going to be coming and here's what they're going to be looking for. Because a foreign dealer, he can't take his whole inventory to this show. So he's got to pick and choose. And if you give him something like that where it says, hey, these are the things that people are going to be looking for, and if you say you're going to be bringing that, we'll put you on the list of people who are going to have that.
So you're trying to... Somebody
comes with a show, and he's going to spend 8 hours at a show, but there's 170 dealers, it's again that needle in a haystack problem.
Yes.
You're going to try to get this out by Christmas so that there's time for the dealers to actually be able to do that?
Yeah, it's not that difficult to create that app, and we're talking right now to the officials there to explain what it is we're going to do and hopefully get them to help promote this because I think it makes the show much more dynamic.
I think your app costs might be cheaper than a table there.
Well, we're going to have a table there as well.
Oh, okay. Well,
well, that was fantastic. I enjoyed having you call in, or actually we called you, but I appreciate you calling in here earlier today to volunteer to come on the show, and I very much enjoyed it.
Well, it was my pleasure to I think we're all trying to do what we can for the hobby, and I think this kind of a dialogue is certainly going to help.
Well, thank you very much. Have a very good day.
Thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Okay, let's talk about our updates. Cash, we gave you some homework to watch a haul video.
Yeah,
what
did
you find?
I have three comments today. First one is Megan, Zola, Sauna, Meredith, and Drew. I want my time back.
You didn't believe me.
I watched some haul videos.
That's H-A-U-L for our older listeners.
And, yeah, I will not be doing that again. I completed my homework assignment, and I am done.
Okay, so I found this top.
Was it a horror movie?
And I kind of liked it. I didn't know if the color was really going to go with anything else.
Oh, my God.
Oh, no, my
so
favorite.
I might take it back.
No, my favorite was a person went to a 99-cent store and bought a set of... girls paraphernalia is all I can call it. And it came from China. And he was showing how the labeling on the box was obviously put through some translator because it was all grammar lacking.
Great.
And so it was kind of humorous, and that's why it wound up at the 99-cent store. And then another person found a hat that was basically made out of little glowing things like a disco ball. And it was like, why am I watching this? And Jessica was watching one with me, and she's going, oh. So my second thing is there is a second reason now to hate Episode 1.
Episode 1 of what?
Star Wars Episode 1.
Go. Besides Jar Jar?
Besides Jar Jar.
Uh-oh.
Rax Tyrell, at the beginning of the podcast race, there's this little...
The podcast race.
I'm sorry.
What kind of race was that?
The pod race. I'm sorry. This is a pod. Obviously,
too many pods.
For some reason, I have podcasting on my mind. I wonder why.
I have no idea why.
Anyway, at the beginning of the pod race, there's this guy with this really long sort of banana-shaped head, and his name is Rax Tyrell, and then it zooms over, and it shows his wife and three kids. And it says his wife just got out of the hospital to come see him race. And she's standing there with the three kids and they're waving back. And 6.5 minutes later, George Lucas has him crash into a rock and disappear into a fiery ball of hell. George Lucas, you are evil. You now have three kids who are going to be raised without their father. The wife lost her husband. That was terrible. Why introduce his wife and three kids and then have them blow up? I mean, he could have just like careened out of the race and rolled three times and got out and brushed himself off and said, darn. But no, you have him disappear into this huge fireball that then Anakin shoots out from. And I understand it makes a really nice picture, but you killed a guy who had three kids.
He must have known about the Disney buyout back then, because that sounds like a Disney buyout.
Wait. Who did that? And this relates to stamp collecting how?
Hey, there's a sheet from that movie.
There are Star Wars. There are Star Wars stamps, okay?
From that movie.
Yeah,
they exist.
I had to file this one.
And the third one is, I never got hold of somebody from Britain. I don't know if we have any listeners in Britain. I know we have a worldwide show, but I'm still looking for a Monty Python stamp. Now I found out in 2009 they made a first-class stamp with a dragon breathing fire. So now I need two British stamps.
Cool.
That's what I'm looking for.
And how does this relate to stamps?
Oh, those are
those
stamps.
Are stamps.
Mr. Stamp Dealer.
Okay, so we had a lot going on social media after the show, the APS show. So I have to catch up a little bit. At StampFinder on Twitter, who we're going to talk to later, says, thanks, Cash and the gang, at StampShowHT, for mentioning me at Forbes article on #Canada, #stamps, and the website called at Forbes.com under the name Best Buys Stamp Valuation Canada. So Chicago Philatelic Society writes, these podcasts are worth checking out if you missed the Grand Rapids show and if you went.
That encompasses everybody.
Yeah. And then we got one from Joseph Wetmore. He's responding to Cash's comments on India stamps. So he says, to really emphasize the point that grading is not subjective to the specific issue, you could have pointed to the British Guiana 1 cent magenta, which would probably grade far less than a 50. But
it would get a 10, by the way. Right?
Negative 30.
Well, it might get a 5.
Yeah, on a scale of 1 to 100, that stamp is a 5 or a 10. It is doctored. It is faulty. It is a 5 or a 10. But it is a unique item. So, yeah, grading on an item like that doesn't matter. And, yes, there are a lot of Indian stamps that would not grade highly, that are incredibly rare and valuable. And that's what I said in the last podcast.
Well, a lot of those Indian state stamps, I mean, you're lucky if they grade 50. If you find one that grades 70, then you really have something there. And it's going to be worth a whole lot more than just your run-of-the-mill stamp. So, yeah, Indian states are tough.
Doesn't the Scott catalog point out frequently, too, on stamps with incredibly high values in bad condition? It'll say that this stamp, the value for the stamp is a condition of fine, very fine, or whatever that price, what condition the stamp is in.
Well, occasionally.
That's what, Joseph Wetmore, and thank you for the comment. He said that probably at some later date, Scott will note that the Hawaiian missionary stamps are all damaged. There are no damaged ones.
Pretty much all off-cover stamps are damaged.
Yeah.
And they should be noted that way in the catalog.
Okay, can I get a drum roll, please?
C3.
Oh, wait. Wrong button. Wrong button. Okay.
So far, our... For our Periscope viewers, this is worth either $12 or $50,000.
$12. I'm sending it to Australia.
Oh, okay. That you can send Australia.
Are you going to turn them down under?
Okay, you can email us at stampshowheretoday@gmail.com, Twitter at stampshowht, Facebook stampshowheretoday, and our website www.stampshowheretoday.com for questions and comments. You can now leave your questions and comments on a Google Voice answering machine anytime, country code 1-949-873-4298. There's also a link to a Google Voice on our website so you can make the call from your computer. And that note, keep collecting.
Hi, this is Randy Shoemaker from PSAG, and you're listening to Stamp Show Here Today podcast.
Hi, this is Bob Prager with Gary Poser Incorporated, and we're in Long Island, New York, and New Jersey. And our philosophy at Gary Poser Incorporated is this. We would rather pay very fair prices on 9 out of 10 collections that we look at versus trying to just offer very low prices on 1 out of 2 and making a big score. That's never our philosophy. So if you want to be treated fairly, please give us a call anytime at 800-323-4279. And again, my name is Bob Prager.
This episode of Stamp Show Here Today is brought to you by the Philatelic Book of Secrets, the book that teaches you about repurse, regums, color varieties, and much more. Get yours for $10 at www.philatelicsecrets.com today.